Hello, everybody. The following was a recorded discussion of the Daily Maxims and More for January 18th, 2011. Today's Maxims were over act, acts, and actions.
Okay, forward. Maxims of Law. Like any other fundamental laws, always hold true and yield the same results under the same conditions. Thus, the application of a maxim to a case before a court is generally the only question, not its validity per se. The true method of applying maxims is to ascertain how the maximum arose, or its intent, and to consider whether the case to which it is applied is of the same character, or whether it is an exception to the an apparently general rule. Further, the understanding or application of a particular maxim may involve the consideration of other maxims which may guide or clarify its correct meaning or application. Thus, certain situations may involve two or more principles of law which would need to be considered in determining the way the law works or is to be applied. Excuse me. That was by Charles Wiseman, June of 1990. Two or more principles of law which would need to be considered in determining the way the law works was to or to be applied. This is, once you get into the meat of whatever you're dealing with, it's pretty hard to generalize in terms of two principles. So, at the moment, I cannot think of an example, but you can see the reasonableness of the rationale. And that's all you really need to be aware of at this point. Okay. Let's go down to the maxims. Actions. Incidentally, C-O-K-E is the man's last name of who has recorded this maxim, but it's pronounced Cook. The frequency of an act affects much. Okay, I remember this one from before. I don't quite remember exactly what I said. But it's something that, if it's something that's highly, highly repetitive. Hello? Excuse me.
I'll see if I can mute him.
The frequency of an act affects much. As something that happens often is going to, and the way in which it relates one to the other will generally be accepted as fact. You know, like red lights, if you watch an intersection, you'll observe that most cars stop when there's a red light. Now, the frequency of occurrence of a car moving through the intersection on a red light is not very often. I'll say the maxim is, when the light's red, stop.
Hey, Timothy?
Excuse me, go ahead.
Hey, could you mute your phone, please?
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
The frequency, things that are done simultaneously with an act are supposed to be inherent in it, to be a constituent part of it. Okay. Simultaneously with an act are supposed to be inherent in it, to be a constituent part of it. You know, most people got accustomed to thinking about the digital world. When the computer came along, the digital computer, It only is looking at one thing at a time, while it looks like it's looking at many, when in fact the world runs in parallel. There is somebody crossing a street in San Antonio right now at the same time there's somebody crossing a street in New York City. That's a very good likelihood. So these would be occurring simultaneously, but are they inherent to each other?
Mm-hmm.
No, they would not. So, but in many cases, there are situations where it is inherent in it. Let's see if we can think of one. Usually traffic is a great analogy. You could have two cars coming together in an intersection with another car simultaneously trying to avoid it. Okay. But it's the whole idea. You could consider the avoidance activity as part of the whole scene there. It would be evidence in that occurrence. So there has to be a direct connection, and usually it's by proximity. How close was it? And let's see, can anybody think of an example there? Simultaneously with an act. There would be if there would be a I'm sorry about that.
I think William's underwater.
Is he? Well, I was thinking of somebody taking the oath of office.
Mm-hmm.
They're raising their hand while their hand's on the Bible, and they're speaking aloud. They are all being done simultaneously. And generally, they usually all have to be done to be considered a proper oath. Now, we have, where there is no act, there can be no force. If everything around you is silence, or if everything, nothing is happening. Now, if you're thinking of this in a court case, really looking for some sort of evidence or something that happened. Now, we have the negatives usually, like, well, the document was not signed. Well, there was no act performed, but in this case, you can't say that there is force behind the contract. You must sign it for there to be force behind the contract. And the signing of it would be an act. Is that an example?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Now, you'll have to apply that when you're seeing things. There was no act here, so you can't claim it. You know, there's no force. You have no... So, how does this interpret into right? Must there be an act before you have a right?
Must there be an act to have a right? Must there be a right to have an act?
Uh-huh. Because would you not say rights have force?
Rights have force.
Would you not say that rights have force?
Yes.
Yes, they do.
Ah, What's the act that caused the force?
It's conscience. It's something within a person.
Acknowledging your act. Or acknowledging your right, I mean.
Yes.
Well, the only thing I can think of, knowing our system, is you were born. You are born with those rights. If you weren't born, you don't have them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anybody agree or disagree?
No, I don't.
You don't agree?
No, I don't. I'm agreeing. I am consenting.
Okay, sir. Well, you see that there is an act associated with those rights. Because you could create a fiction, a legal fiction. Now, not only that, legal fictions get around it by saying they have a born-on date. Birth dates apply to legal fictions. That's why I
can
think of the human, the sentient human, having a
birth
date of first breath.
Birth dates apply to legal fiction?
Yes. Or even Budweiser has a born-on date. But all corporations, that's what the birthday means. What is your date? They actually call it date of birth.
That's when the ship came into port.
Corporations have date of birth.
And that's the, when the ship came into port?
Yeah.
No, it's the, when the corporation was chartered or put into effect.
But actually, I was born before my mother signed me away.
Oh, my goodness. So, you were born with those rights, okay? You have rights when you were born. When can your mother sign you away?
As a minor, they have control over a minor until we are of age, and then we have the ability to take those rights back.
In effect, you're born with them, and they do, you know, nobody can take your life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The common one is the thefts and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the idea. Now, we have a concept in our legal system that's called the disabilities of a minor.
Wait,
it's always stated kind of in the reverse because of the way of working with it, but you cannot sue a minor. A minor really can't enter into a contract. So how did the minor pledge all its equity interest that it will ever have when it was a minor?
It couldn't.
That's part of the case that enables you to get it back. Because if you were under the lawful age of contracting, it could have been a good contract, not a fraudulent contract. It would have been void, though, because you had the disabilities of a minor. Now, this is a unique legal situation when they sense that the humans that were slaves were property. They were essentially legal fictions in a way, but they were things. Now, could you sue your car?
If it was a Ford, yeah.
Can you sue your refrigerator?
Okay.
So things could be sued. So when they freed the slaves, they were still property under the law. And the other state said, you need to do something to straighten this out because the disabilities have not been removed. It's a disability on us. I cannot sue him. Okay? The same thing goes true for minors. When they had busing by the government, or government-ordered busing in Texas, we had students whose parents could go before a judge and who had distances and other hardship things like that, and the parents could enter into an agreement and have the disabilities of the minor removed. And a 16-year-old could be deemed an adult at that point. Once they were deemed an adult, they could not order them to be bused. Okay?
Okay.
Now, but rights do lead to force. To write is to act. Signatures. Now, I remember us having this next one. No one can do that indirectly, which can be done directly.
Which cannot be done directly.
Yeah, that's right. Now, let's take signatures. Now, at the point in time this was done, we didn't have images floating around as bits, which is really voltage spikes occurring over time on a wire. So, can you send a signature over the wire electronically?
Not supposed to, or not, I don't know if it's, well, yes, you can, actually.
You think it's a real signature?
Only if you have the original copy, so then no.
But we can literally create them now, can't we, with pads?
Mm-hmm.
So the whole area of signatures on documents is in limbo,
mm-hmm.
in a way, and there's been general compromises. We can take a picture, which is nothing but bits, and get a picture of the signature. But if I can get a picture of the signature in digital form, how do I keep someone from using it inappropriately?
Right.
So if we say no one can do that indirectly, which cannot be done directly, guess why the phrase blue ink signature came into existence?
Wet ink signature, yes.
Wet ink signature came into existence.
Right.
At one time, there was no need to say that, was there?
Nope.
So on formal documents that are going to affect people's liabilities and rights in significant amounts, they must not use indirect signatures. Now, people can take a Xerox picture of your note and stack them, write a bond about them, and sell them to somebody somewhere. And since you've already got this nice, neat pack of Xerox, why don't we make two copies of each while we're at it? And collate it, and maybe we can sell two bonds.
Yeah.
And so the problem with our commercial system today is that's what has happened. There's multiple copies being honored that are violating this maxim with regard to signatures.
Wow. All right.
They're accepting an indirect signature.
And we've been none the wiser.
No, we have not.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, the people that do this usually only make a commission off of it. They need to create the transaction.
Hmm.
They don't care about the contents.
Mm-hmm.
So, is that a good example, folks, for the directly cannot be done directly?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, it's a very good practice to not get in the habit of faxing or emailing signatures and to always ask for the wet ink signature on a document, which says, takes time to post it. Got to get there. But we got FedEx, don't we? And UPS. And that was the basis for that menace. It could handle those sort of things.
All right. Well, thank you, Chaplain Raymond.
Okay.